The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 6 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 18th of September, 2023. How are you all? How was your weekend? Let us know. 086 60 25000. The WhatsApp and text line open for you right now. And in fairness, it's open for you all of the time if you ever need it. And we've lots to come on the show. As you can imagine, lots of stuff broke over the weekend, which we'll be covering, and lots of interesting topics for you. If you want to get involved in the conversation, raise your own topics, your own issues, 074 91 25000, and emails, comments at Highland Radio. They'll get us from anywhere. Right, as I say, our guests already waiting to join us, so we'll start with the newspapers, as we always do this morning. The Donegal News, and this is an issue we're going to be talking about a little later on. A call has been made for permanent park supervisors to be deployed at Burnham McGlinchey Town Park following reports of concerning activity over the weekend. On Saturday, a local mother urged parents to report suspicious activity after her three-year-old son was allegedly given a bar of chocolate by a man in the park. The woman claimed her son told her the man had been hiding in the bushes. The alleged incident occurred while a number of children were playing in the park, and we're going to speak to that mother on the show a little later on, so please stay tuned for that. The Derry News this morning, a Derry community worker has expressed the mounting concern about the perceived recent increase in the number of suicides in the city. Speaking to Derry News, Martin Connolly, the manager of Community Restoration Justice, Community Restorative Justice, which is based in Gallia Community Centre, said he's becoming increasingly worried by what he described as the normalisation almost of suicide. Martin said, "At the minute, all I'm hearing are conversations like, there was another one at the weekend. It's just a vicious cycle at the minute. You worry for the future. You worry for your grandchildren and the young people in this city. It is terrible. It is heartbreaking." And it truly, truly is. If that's a topic you wish to discuss as well, of course, you know the numbers. Let's go to the national newspapers. The Irish Times this morning. We learned that the European Union is working on a new $20 billion package of military support for Ukraine to run over 5 years. So the EU aren't in peace mode at the moment, or in fact they aren't perhaps seeking to find a resolution to this crisis. They're actually funding and supplying weapons to Ukraine to cover the next 5 years. It's been raised, the issue which has been raised informally in recent weeks with the Irish government and others. Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs Micheál Martin said yesterday he had alerted the cabinet that the proposal was coming down the tracks. He said it was agreed Ireland would provide only non-lethal aid, and Ireland has provided quite a bit of non-lethal aid so far. How much would you imagine? €122 million has been given so far by Ireland, by you, in non-lethal military assistance to Ukraine. Mr. Martin told the Irish Times in New York he would be announcing a further €23 million in government aid to Ukraine at the United Nations in the coming days. So that would bring, since the war began, €150 million of non-lethal military assistance to Ukraine from Ireland. But the EU is currently working on a €20 billion package of military support for Ukraine to cover the next 5 years. And of course, there's also money going into them from the United States and Canada and other other countries that are backing them. The Irish Independent this morning, the victim of a random attack at Dublin Airport was smoking a cigarette outside the departure hall when he was stabbed multiple times yesterday. Sources say a penknife was used in the attack and the man suffered several stab wounds. Emergency services were alerted to the incident outside Terminal 1 at around 11:30 a.m. yesterday morning. Airport police responded to the serious assault within 90 seconds of being alerted to the matter before Gardaí arrived on scene. The victim, who's in his 50s, was stabbed a number of times in the neck and abdomen. He was rushed to Beaumont Hospital, where he was treated for injuries that are not believed life-threatening. And I think he might count himself lucky once the dust has settled in that. It was obviously a short blade knife that managed to miss major arteries, or he certainly would be in a far worse condition, dead most likely. A suspect was arrested at the scene on suspicion of assault and was last night detained at a North Dublin Garda station. The man who is also in his 50s, is not known to the victim, and there is understood to be no clear connection between the men. So this other person just decided to randomly attack him. We discussed this on Friday, the €240,000 job of a photographer. It was to take still pictures on the set of the soap Fair City. Well, that €240,000 contract has now been suspended. Director General Kevin Backer said the process would be paused following his decision to halt discretionary spending. The move to advertise for photography, which would have paid a maximum of $60,000 a year over 4 years, prompted serious questions from politicians, given it was happening at the same time the broadcaster was asking the government for a multi-million euro bailout. And that is the one that we found out about. And that is the one now that has been suspended. It does make you wonder what other tenders are out or what other monies are being paid that are going ahead as planned, because we don't know about it. The politicians don't know about it. But anyway, I would imagine there was someone, maybe an incumbent, who's not going to be too happy that maybe they've lost out on that contract now. So Lee mentioned the Late Late Show before we came on air officially on the 9 till noon show. What did you think of it? How did you think the show went? Did you enjoy Patrick Kilty? I think for the most part, everyone enjoyed his performance. It was funny at the beginning. He did what he had to do, I suppose. He referenced the scandal that is swirling around as he was appointed, not over his appointment, but as he was appointed. He didn't mind referencing the fact he was paying for his own flights. He had a bit of fun with that. Again, there was a few other bits that I didn't. I don't know those three people. I know them. I know two of them. I don't know all three of them. I'm not familiar with their podcast, and it wasn't really made clear to me what they do or what they did. And also the Mary McAleese's contribution was a wee bit, I didn't understand what was going on there either. There was one question towards the end, I suppose, where there was a bit of headlines from, but other than that, it was a bit rambly to me anyway. But highly anticipated viewing figures for Patrick Kilty's first night at the helm of The Late Late Show will be released at lunchtime today. It's expected that Mr. Kilty's numbers will be a lot higher than those for Ryan Tubridy's opening night on September 2nd last year because of the curiosity factor. An RTE spokesperson would not be drawn on any guesstimated figures over the weekend, but added the audience figures are collated by Nielsen, an independent outside body, and they'll be provided to us at lunchtime on Monday. We do not engage in estimates until we are given the data. But I think, as I say, I've no doubt he'll do quite well. The people I've been chatting to sort of casually over the weekend watched it, enjoyed his stuff, then found the guests a wee bit meh and tuned out. The two Johnnies were on it as well, of course, they're 2FM. And the 2FM guests as well. But anyway, it doesn't matter what I think. What do you think? 086-6025000, 086-6025000, or give us a call on 074-91-25000. The footballer who was on the show, his name escapes me at the moment. I know him, but I just can't think of his name. The one other thing I thought about his interview was that... McLean, isn't it? Yeah, it's McLean. The one thing I thought about his interview is that if you didn't know what the crack was, like, in terms of the abuse he gets, it was never really referenced. It sort of started off as like, well, how do you deal with the stuff from the fans? So if you didn't know really what that is, the kind of interview would have went over your head a little bit. But anyway, it was interesting to see James on the show, and a lot of people enjoyed that interview. But as I say, what do you think? 086-6025000. The Mirror this morning. TV bosses last night launched two investigations into Russell Brand, with one insider admitting there is more than a whiff of panic. Both the BBC and a production company on behalf of Channel 4 are probing a series of serious allegations of misconduct centred on Brand while he was working for them in mid-2000s. A source said the reviews will look at what concerns were raised at the time and, crucially, if they were acted on. There is more than a whiff of panic among certain quarters. This off the back now of a special, as it's described, dispatches show broadcast on Channel 4 at 9 o'clock on Saturday night, which is a little bit unusual, where there were four women who made a range of allegations against Russell Brand, who was very popular at one point. He used to host a spin-off of the Big Brother show. He had his own shows on other channels as well. And they made a series of serious allegations of him. Russell Brand now is not in the mainstream media eye. He is an alternative voice. He speaks out against Big Pharma. He speaks out against the mainstream media and war and who benefits from it and all that type of stuff. He's got a lot of followers on YouTube. He's appeared on a few shows over in America as well. So he is still incredibly successful, just not in the mainstream, in inverted commas. And he made one statement as it relates to those allegations, which he fully denied. And I'm sure he'll speak again to his followers because they expect the truth. And I'm sure he'll, but I'd imagine he will address that to them. On to the Sun now. Irish OAPs look set to be handed a pension increase of between 12 and 20 euro in budget 2024. Government TDs have yet to agree on a final figure for the pension rise, but have been informed it will go ahead. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar previously hinted pensioners were in line for a budget boost. A Fine Gael source said the state pension is now 265 a week and we want to move it to 300 euro per week before the next election. And they kind of have two budgets to do that, I suppose. Hopefully now people who do get increases don't find it's taken out. Often people find that when they get a payment increase, a social welfare payment increase, especially if they are social housing residents, that effectively it's written off with a rent rise. You get a rent increase or you get an increase in your pension or your pay, then you're assessed and then your rent goes up because you have more money. So effectively, they give it with one hand and take it back with the other. Is that an experience you've had? Hopefully it doesn't happen this time so people can get the benefit of any increases. And the Irish Daily Mirror, finally, Daniel O'Donnell. Well, he's revealed he's reaching a new generation of fans thanks to a TikTok page he launched last year. The Donegal-born star says he usually recognises long-time fans at gigs, but he's recently seen younger ones showing up who tell them that how they saw him on his social media channel. Daniel, who's 61, said, "I feel very grateful that I've been allowed to have the career that I have. I've done something all of my life that I've enjoyed so much, and not many people can say that about what they do." But now he's using TikTok to reach a brand new generation of fans. Okay, and we're joined on the programme now by Emma. Hi, Emma. How are you getting on?
Not too bad. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for joining us to help us spread awareness. It's not easy speaking on the radio or public speaking for that matter, so it's really, really appreciated. So thank you, Emma. And it's off the back of an experience that you had and you and your child had at the town park in Letterkenny recently. So can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, well, I took the two small kids, the one's three and the other one's one and a half. I brought them to Bernard McGlinchey Park at about 10:30 in the morning simply because it wouldn't be packed and the one-year-old could kind of batter about. But when we got there, it was very quiet. We went on. I took the look of what his balance bike because I wanted him to have a look at that new area that they opened because I thought it was a great facility. But when we got there, the one-year-old saw the swings, and of course, we were dragged in there first. There was very, very few people there, maybe two mothers and two small kids on swings, and they left immediately when I got there. And then it was just myself, Luca, and my little child, my smaller girl, and another mother a wee bit younger than me with her toddler and a small child in a pram. I was kind of pushing my child on the swings and kind of keeping an eye on her because it was very slippy because it had been wet.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl was up playing on the bigger playground and shouting down and me shouting back, and because he likes you to watch him, you know how children are.
Mm-hmm.
And within 2 minutes, he was shouting, "Mammy, Mammy." So I kind of went up towards him that way because I thought maybe he didn't want to be on his own. And when I got there, I was helping the younger one climb up to go on the slide. And he kept saying to me, "We can't go down the slide. The sweets are there." And I said, "What are you on about, you know?" And he says, "I can't go down the slide because the sweets are there, Mammy. They're from Santa." And I said, I kind of just passing him off thinking he's just chatting rubbish, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept saying it and kept saying it. And I said, "Oh, where are the sweets?" So I climbed up myself and I looked in the slide and there was a whole bunch of Kinder chocolate sweets and bars and a note saying, "For kids from Santa."
Mm.
Now, the only reason I knew to ask him is because he can't read. So I said, "How do you know that they're from Santa?" And he said, "Because the man told me." And I said, "What man?" He says, "Oh, he's away into the trees there, Mummy." So I turned around and I kind of looked, and of course, pit to your stomach, I kind of felt a bit sick and I thought, where is this man? I said, "What did he say to you?" and Luca now turned out his pockets as in gesture and what he did, mm-hmm. and says, all the sweets are gone now. They're all from Santa. I said, did he give you any chocolate? He says, yep. And I says, well, where is it? And he says, in my pocket. And he handed me out two bars. And I says, put them back in the slide there. You're not allowed to take them. So he put them back in and I kind of ushered them down. I was kind of shaking a bit because I thought it was a bit strange. And to be honest with you, some randomer coming out of the trees to talk to your child is a bit creepy.
Yeah.
But I approached the younger mother then because she had been coming up towards the slide area and asked her, did she see a man there? And I told her what happened and she said she didn't see any man at all. And I kind of took the kids and went towards the exit again, but we did a lap around, you know, to see if I could see any man mm-hmm. in the park.
Now, people might go, well, maybe you didn't see a man and stuff like that. Right. So Luca is a pretty switched on young fella, but he can't read. So in other words, the note that those watching the show can see here, it says four kids from Santa. So Luca wasn't able to read that. So someone had to say that to him for him to be able to relate
that
to
made
you.
Me think.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
The only way that I copped on, he was talking to somebody and I knew from him speaking to me what he was saying. He was kind of, he was telling me what he had said, you know, and it wasn't something that he can come up with himself as 3-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, how do you know they're from Santa? He goes, because the man told me. I says, what man? He says, the man that gave me the sweets. Mm. And I says, where is he? He says, he's in the trees.
Jeez.
And then he pointed to where he went up and through the trees, you know?
Yeah. And of course, the gesturing of empties his pockets. He's not going to come up with that himself.
His pockets,
you know?
Yeah, he doesn't. He wouldn't do that
exactly.
himself.
That's something he's seen and he's copying. So just remind us, what time of the day was this again?
I went there at 10:30. This happened roughly at about maybe, I would say about 10 to 11, 11 o'clock.
Mm, okay. And how did Luca describe what the person looked like or what he was wearing?
Well, I had been on the phone then at that stage to the Gardaí,
okay,
and they
had
said, I know it's a silly question, but can you ask him to see what he says? Mm. So I said, you know, I thought I need to kind of ask him random questions now instead of putting words in his mouth. So I said, you know, was this man wearing a tracksuit like you are? And he says, no, he had shorts. And I says, okay. And I says, what colour were the shorts? He says, blue. And I says, was he wearing a T-shirt? He says, no, he had a green jumper. And I says, right, okay. And then I said, well, you know, was he a young man like Daddy? Or was he an older man like Granda? And he says, oh, he's an older man like Granda. He's got white hair.
Very specific stuff. Yeah, really specific stuff. So we'll talk about the conversation with the guards at the moment. But presumably this person is not entering via the established exit or is hiding for long periods of time in the trees. Like, it's very very concerning, isn't it? And why would
very
any
concerned.
Person approach any child, and especially with sweets and a note? It's very peculiar.
Well, if you were going to be kind enough to give a child sweets, Greg, anybody would go approach a parent and say, you know, oh, would it be okay if he had a bar of chocolate, you know? As you don't hide in trees and speak to a child privately and then disappear into trees again, you know.
I know. It's just, and your instinct as a mum kicked in straight away. You knew there was something very off.
Knew from talking to him, Greg, that it was something not right about it, you know.
For sure. So then you said, right, I better call the guards about this. And how did that conversation go?
They were actually very helpful, in fairness. Now, they obviously asked the questions and wanted a description of what Luca thought he looked like. I had kind of gotten the shakes from the whole experience, mm-hmm. so I took my kids and I left the park. But within 10 minutes, a detective was up to speak to me and has been in contact with me every day since and is making efforts to try. He's actually rang and said he's got a request in for the CCTV footage from two different cameras, mm-hmm. I think,
okay.
and he's hoping to get them today.
Like, listen, at the end of the day, until we find what went on here, you'd be very mm-hmm. reluctant to go there with your children again. You would,
well,
personally.
That's so sad because it's such a beautiful park, but it's completely put me off wanting to go anywhere near it now, you know.
Yeah, okay. And as I say, it's just something weird about it. So he had sweets on the top of the slide already, or did Luca?
He had obviously given Luca a bar or two for his pocket, and then he must have put the rest inside the tube slide at the top, so you wouldn't see it as a parent.
Yeah,
you wouldn't see them lying. You know, they were inside the tube slide, so you know the only ones that would have access to them were kids, really, that were up going down the slides. You know,
and I mean, listen, you try and get inside someone's head like this. I mean, is that to sort of earn trust with them? In other words, if they go back again and next thing, oh, did you get the sweets I left you the next time they're there or something? You know what I mean? Yeah, as I say, I hope it's not that. But, you know, you start wondering. Yeah. It's a strange series of events to approach a young child where their parent is, you know, not directly beside them. It's completely wrong. But then again, this sort of dropping some sweets off mysteriously, are they trying to create some scenario where they can build trust with kids?
Well, the bundle of sweets on its own, anyway, is a bit strange. Do you know, it's what is the intention? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit strange. Like, it's just, I don't know. It felt wrong, completely wrong. You know, you don't just hide sweets in a slide in a park. Do you know?
And it's not a very nice feeling to have a stranger come out of the bushes and approach your wee one, because then you think, well, what if they wanted to grab him?
It completely freaked me out. Yeah, completely freaked me out. I just wanted to get them and get out of there, because, and it's not the first story neither has come up this last couple of weeks.
No, we can talk about that, but we had another concerned parent. Was it down at the skate park? Was it down the skate park that there was a story recently whereby there was someone acting really quite suspiciously? I think it was behind a similar area, is it? Okay. Caroline's just been informing. What did your friend say to you? Sorry, Emma.
A friend of mine had been walking there maybe a week or two, and she told me this yesterday, but I didn't know. But she had said a man was in the trees in the middle of the park as well, and whenever she was walking past, she felt like he was following her, and every time she turned around, he would disappear again, you know. It was, I don't know, there's obviously, we would hate to think it's a group of men, Greg, but, you know, if it's one man, then he's obviously in the park a lot.
Well, we can't ignore these things until we get to the bottom of it. That's the bottom line. Emma, I don't know if you want to stay there just to have Councillor Jay McMonagle, who's chair of the Joint Policing Committee. You're listening to Emma there. Any parent at all, Jerry, would find the hair standing on the back of their neck listening to that, because you can imagine, well, what if it was us or what was it me? What's your take on what's going on?
Yeah, good morning, Emma, and good morning, Greg. The hairs in the back of my neck are standing, as a grandfather even. But look, this isn't an isolated incident. Unfortunately, there's been a number of such complaints and concerns have been raised over this last number of years. And Emma's right, the park is a fantastic facility, and it's being extended on now with the new adventure park. And it's growing, and it's growing in attraction. It's bringing more and more people into the park. And at council level, like, I mean, we've got CCTV installed, and hopefully the cameras will reveal something that that can be acted on. But we also have been looking for park wardens to be there on a permanent basis, to be there every day when the park is open, to assist and help mothers and people who are using the park and keep an eye on it generally, and to try and prevent this type of activity. I mean, the chocolate bars in the swing is so wrong in so many levels, and so many concerning in so many levels. Like, you know, someone... A man in the bushes giving out chocolate to a child, it just doesn't bear thinking about. But even for an adult to give chocolate to a child without the permission of the parents is totally irresponsible, because...
Well, a lot of children could have had a nut allergy, for crying out loud.
Yes, you know, exactly. And it could have been all sorts of consequences coming out of that. But to be thinking that you're going to a safe place with your children to play in a park, and that some person is hiding in the bushes, I mean, it just scares the life out of you as a parent. And it's something that we as a council, and we need to do something about this. We need to be looking at putting in place those park wardens. And I'm really pleased that the guards have been on it so quickly and listened to Emma, took all the information they could, and are now following it up with the CCTV. And I hope that we can get something from the CCTV.
Yeah. Well, two things are going to happen. Either A, we do something whereby people can feel safe there and the beautiful facility is used, or B, nothing is done and people like Emma and many, many others simply don't use it. So we're maintaining a public facility that a lot of people don't feel safe going. And then you won't hear their voices because they'll stay away from it. You know what I mean? So I think something needs to be done shortly at least to make people feel secure and safe, or else... You know, people just simply just won't go there, especially on your own. Do you know what I mean? No one wants the possibility of an encountering some person out of the bushes giving children sweets. You want to avoid that.
No, we have our MD meeting now tomorrow, and I certainly be raising it that we need to be looking at that very, very seriously. And we need not to be looking at the park on its own. We have next to the park is some canals, which is being renovated and more services are being provided there. So that means more and more people are attending that area. With Cairdhe Na Cailleadh, which has recently extended their premises. So there's a massive footprint there that is an attraction to a lot of people for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of that is the Bernard McGinchy Town Park, which is a fantastic facility. And just listening to Emma, we need to build the confidence of parents like Emma again and what the general population, they come into Bernard McGinchy Park, which is a safe place to be. But unfortunately, as I said, there's been a number of these unsafe incidents down through the years, and we need to ensure that people have confidence in coming to the park, that they're looked after. And the way to do that, I think, is for us to employ park wardens there from the park opens until it closes in the evening time. You're there to help and assist and reassure all the people who visit and use the park that it is a safe place and are there to help and assist them.
Yeah, Emma, a caller says, if it was something sinister, why would the seats be left out openly? Not everything is something suspicious. And I mean, this is suspicious. There's no there's no reason for a fully grown adult to be leaving sweets there. And maybe the caller missed the fact that he actually handed your son sweets and said they were all gone. Yeah. I mean, I don't really feel there's any mitigating circumstances here, because at least this person, even if they didn't have motivations beyond what they were doing, needs to understand that this is not really suitable adult behaviour. There's no real excuse
but
for
even
it.
Even if there was no bad intention, it still doesn't sit well with parents, you know, to leave chocolate in the slide. It just doesn't sit well with anybody, I don't think. You know, it's just not right.
A caller says too, why are there trees and shrubs around the playing area in the two parks? I'm not familiar with it. Could that area be cleared? Go ahead.
I think it would be a good idea to remove them trees, but that's just my opinion. But it is the opinion of a lot of other people too. You know, to have it a little bit more easy viewing,
improve
so
lines
that people
of sight.
Can't be hiding in trees, you know, around the park, especially around the kids' playing area, you know.
What do you think of that, councillor, that, you know, yeah, particularly no, look, around the children's playing area, maybe we should just open up the lines of sights and
open them up, yeah. Yeah,
look, I fully support
short
that. I fully support that. Look, with children myself, we have grandchildren now. We take them to the park, and when you're sitting there, you like to see where they're playing, who they're playing with, and that they're not getting in any difficulties or harmful ways. So yeah, look, that's something we need to look at. And as a council, and I'm sure our outdoor staff look at it regularly. If that's a request, then it can be addressed fairly quickly. Now, coming into this time of year, we should maybe look at that and try and do something and open it up a bit more and let the sight lines be more visible to all who use the park.
And Councillor, just for clarification, is there currently CCTV in the park?
Yeah, there is.
There is, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll see what comes from that. So I appreciate your time. Emma, I appreciate you sharing the story as well. And hopefully now something happens whereby you can go back and enjoy that public space. It's different for me. I live in the country, right? But it's different for you. The chance to get the children out and out and the bikes and all that kind of stuff and have a bit of fun. It's more difficult in a built-up area. Emma, thanks very much.
No bother.
Best
thank
wishes
you.
To you and the family. Councillor Jerry McMullaghlingane, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, have you had a similar experience or want to comment on that? The number to do so is via WhatsApp and text 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. And if you want to send us a voice message, by the way, on WhatsApp, feel free to do that as well. We can play those out if you want to express your views that way. 086 60 25000. Send us a voice app, voice message, and we can play that out on air as well. But if you are sending us a WhatsApp voice message, and don't be shocked then if you did hear it on the radio. Do you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying to you. But as I say, if you maybe you're not, maybe you're just not really good at typing or something, and you want to be able to have your view heard, feel free. WhatsApp, voice message, us 086 60 25000. And you're very welcome back to the programme. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, as I mentioned to you. Or give us a call on 074 91 25000. A caller says, an increase in the pension. There must be an election in the background, or am I just a cynic? Well, both could be true. The EU's new mandatory migrant relocation deal would be the detriment of Ireland and its people. It's important for the Irish people to have a say in this matter by way of a referendum. Don't be jealous, Greg. Everyone likes Patrick Kilty, as do I. I thought Patrick was great. As I say, I just think he needs a little bit of a handout with some of the guests. Morning. Oh, my God, Patrick Kilty was cringy and wooden. The fake emotion at the start, please. And the guests, need I say more? I don't think he was. I didn't find he was cringy or wooden. Obviously, it's very nerve-wracking. And I thought the emotion was genuine, personally. But that's your opinion, and we appreciate it. Greg, Patrick Kilty was very good when compared to Tubridy. He comes across as not so entitled. He never interrupted guests, which is great. As for the two Johnnies, they must have RTE connections because they're terrible. Well, they work for RTE. They've got a new show on the telly, and they're on 2FMs in the afternoon, and they say lads a lot. Right, Caroline McLaughlin is a Tip O'Neill Diaspora awardee and joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Caroline, and congratulations to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you very much for the good wishes.
What does something like this mean to you, to be recognised in Donegal?
It's a huge honour, because it's local recognition, right, for someone who's from Balcrana originally, and who is away abroad, still very proud of their roots and very much flying that flag and using their platform for good. So it's very much something I'm very proud of, to have recognition from home.
Now, you've been lauded and praised for your community building talents and your long-term dedication to giving back to community. So how do you do that, Caroline? Tell us a little bit about the work that you do.
So I work in financial services, so I have a day job that pays my bills.
Everyone needs one of those. Yes.
Yeah. And I guess I was very fortunate that I had a great education in Crana College, Buncrana, and then I went to University of Ulster. And I don't take that for granted, because my own parents didn't even get a chance to go to secondary school. So it is one of those things where I had those opportunities, and I now see that there's so much focus on diversity and social mobility, and it's not always the case still to this day that people have those opportunities. And also that you don't always need education. It's, you know, the apprenticeships programs and what have you. But for me, in where I work, we have an Irish network, and I've been co-chair for over 10 years. And essentially, we use that platform for something good. We do a collaboration with Corporation Ireland, a charity based out of Northern Ireland, Peace Building. So every year for about 15 years now, we've taken students from two sides of the community to London. We mix them with London students from different ethnic backgrounds. We also have representation from the Irish Traveller Movement and from Dublin, inner city Dublin. And it's all about networking, broadening horizons, giving them something different to think about. It's not about a career in financial services. We do visit hotel kitchens. We do go to Bloomberg TV studios. We try to just, you know, give that boost of confidence and take them out of their environment that they're used to, where they can meet new people.
And they can be, we can all be, I suppose, but particularly young people, dependent on your background, you can be in a bubble, really, you know, and it's really great to interact with other people. And very quickly you realise that we're basically all the same, aren't we, Caroline?
100 million percent. And for the London students, like, I'm very conscious that we go to the state schools and we invite them in. They can see these Canary Wharf towers from where they live, but they've never really been in around the Canary Wharf region, or they don't have anyone maybe in their family or network that is working there. So it's a great opportunity for them to also come in and see what's inside the doors of these buildings, see what a trading floor looks like, and, you know, inspire them to think about what they might want to do in the future.
And we see a sort of a public face of, say, for instance, our closest neighbour, Britain and Ireland, you know, the British-Irish relations. And we maybe sometimes associate that with, you know, what happens at the very top level politically, the commentary, the diplomacy and all that kind of stuff. But I think, and this is where one of the areas you are excellent in, I think really an awful lot of the groundwork, the real stuff that affects real people on day-to-day basis is kind of done under the surface to some extent. It's almost invisible to the general population. And that's something you work very hard in, isn't it, in improving those relationships?
Oh, completely. It's a real practical thing to do, right? We have a, you know, a small budget to cover some of the expenses. And then, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get. I'm like always, who can do something for free? Can we get a speaker to come in? All my Irish connections. My green book gets a lot of a run up to this event. And the network that I am co-chair for, like we get volunteers to come have pizza, sit beside the young person and do a bit of a speed networking around the room. And it's just a real practical way of giving back as opposed to just throwing money at something. So it's, you know, it's, for us, it's very rewarding.
Yeah. And the one thing in visiting the Irish diaspora in various parts of the world, and I hope I can explain this correctly, I've kind of said it before, there's a sense of community, togetherness, support, that sometimes I think we're seeing more, unfortunately, outside of Ireland. And we also need to be doing the kind of work that's going on in London or Dubai or New York or wherever it might be amongst Irish people at home. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but I just think we're doing it better now outside of the country in terms of being there for each other and stuff than we are actually doing on the island, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, and I'm always saying it takes a village to raise a child. And wherever we go, as an all immigrants, really, you create a village around you because your family become friends when you, your friends become family when you're away from home. And I guess, I'm always in awe of the organizations from Bunkrana in a way that for me growing up, like the local band, the GAA, the community groups, the charity groups. My mum's involved in the retirement groups where they have coffee mornings. And I feel like they do it so well in Ireland because it's the local community, especially rural Ireland, the local community groups. And when you're in a big city, as much as you're in a big city, you're actually still in a small neighbourhood, right? So all the neighbourhoods in New York or because my siblings all live abroad, actually. So my other sister, Pauline, is in London. My brother's in Boston and my sister Margot's in New York. So we're all involved in community groups where we live because you have to build that village where you are to find that support.
And with amongst our diaspora too, there's different groups of individuals, and one which there's quite a bit of focus on, and I can really get why there is, when people who've moved to another part of the world, when they go past working age, and all of a sudden their network that was there can sort of begin to sort of diminish, and it can be very lonely, and then having to access state services and it can all be very complicated. And then there are, of course, students that travel over there, maybe inspired to do so. And then, of course, I think students and women in particular are two groups that you like to focus your attentions on.
That's right. So being here nearly 25 years, in London alone, I've seen charities like the Irish Centre in Camden, and I've seen like a local charity to me, Irish Community Services, who are there to support that ageing generation of Irish. And it's to do with, as you say, like the bureaucracy of claiming for their benefits or their pension or helping them with accommodation needs. But just to create that social forum, because they may not be as mobile. Some of their friends may have passed on or moved back to Ireland, and there's also groups that help that relocation process. So we do what we can in terms of, I do have that day job and I am a single parent and I have, it's a full on life, but I try to get other people who maybe have more time or disposable income to give. And so we are very much there to support, attend events like this week in London Irish Centre. Dermot Kennedy and Glenn Hansard are doing an event for charity on Wednesday. So there's, you know, like, right, get your wallets out and go and support it. And, you know, you're all lucky to be working in a well-paid industry, financial services especially. But I find like the Irish companies here, especially the construction companies, are so generous.
Amazing. Yeah.
so generous. And you were over for the vintage day. And you just see that in operation, right? They're just there with their, what can we do? Not being waiting to be asked, what can we do?
Yeah, it is amazing. There's some amazing people over there. But it's pulling it all together, and that's the networking side of it, isn't it? Because you can have loads of people that are well-resourced and have good hearts, but you have to get them all together, get them at the same events, get them into the same room, and that's, I suppose, where all that's the bit I would struggle with. You know, that's the networking side of it.
Yeah, and that's... I'm like, right, here is the WhatsApp comes out from Caroline, or the email comes out from Caroline with a big invitation in the title, and then the price will be in there for what they need to pay to attend. And I guess during the pandemic, we found an ask from the local charities here where I live, and it was, you know, to be a befriender, to be someone who would call up someone, or to go to the older Irish person's house to help them with technology, because they gave out like iPads and what, and they wanted to help them with how do we use these. And also, we did a hamper at Christmas. So for the whole of December, my son and I were delivering hampers to houses. And it took a long time, but we enjoyed it as much as the recipient enjoyed it, because it was a chat at a doorstep that they haven't been able to do for months.
You're based in London now, but you've travelled all over the world. And at the moment, we have a situation whereby a lot of young people are leaving. There's a couple of reasons for it. A, to go out and see the world and explore and grow and what have you, and fantastic. B, there's those that feel they have no choice. They feel there's nothing here for them. I might ask in a moment what we need to be doing, maybe to make it a choice rather than a need. But what is your advice for young people looking to travel the world to see new experiences?
Yeah, and I guess for me, it was very much adventure, and I'm still away. And just be prepared. I think that people underestimate what it's like to go away. And London Irish Centre looks after as many young people as it does old people. So look out for your local Irish groups. It's very important that you join those groups. You feel the support. The GAA was hugely important to me in Australia and in London. I played football and camogie. I'm good at neither. But it still was an instant network of people.
And I think the sports side of things, and particularly in London, is kind of replacing the social clubs and things. Mm-hmm. People are interacting and connecting through their GAA club rather than the Irish club or whatever it might have been in the past.
Exactly. And also, you don't need to be good at the sport to be part of it. You could be involved in whether it's their social media or their marketing campaign or being a treasurer, just turning up to support them, cut the oranges. Because we still get involved in that side of things. And so yeah, be prepared. And, also be prepared to get your hands mucky, because you need to pay rents wherever you go. And if you can get some sort of temporary accommodation with someone, that's great. Get your feet on the ground. And secondly, get your CV and make sure it's, you have it done up to as best as ability. So that's there and leverage your network. Get who do your parents know? Who do your friends know?
Yeah, you have to have a bit of neck on you, don't you? You have to use
you do.
Advantage. Finally, you've travelled extensively, and I know you're incredibly proud of Bonkrana and the Inishowen Peninsula and the county more generally. But on your return visits, what do you see that you think we could improve on?
So I know that there's big plans for the shorefront in Bonkrana, so that will be a great, and also for Dunree, they've also got a grant to do a tourist attraction. So we've really found that the Wild Atlantic Way has extended to Donegal far more now than it had in before the pandemic, I guess. There's been that real introduction by the rest of Ireland. We also have the Inishowen Innovation Hub just opened there it's early September. A fantastic remote working space. So I really encourage people who are either going home on holidays or just go on holidays, and you can use that space to work from. I've used it myself. It's a great resource. There's a good lot of them all around Donegal, actually. So it's a great way to use that flexible working narrative. And accommodation, I think, is sometimes tricky with a lot of the places around, and it's expensive. So, but if Airbnbs become something that's really popular now, and family groups go together in those, we've done that every year now since the pandemic as well. It's a real thing to go as a group and rent somewhere.
Lovely stuff. Come here. I wish we had more time, but Caroline, congratulations and lovely to speak to you and hear of the work that you're doing over there. Vitally, vitally important stuff. And I'm delighted that it's actually been recognised. So Caroline McLaughlin, Tip O'Neill, Diaspora Awardee, thank you so very much. And again, congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Take care. We'll be back after the news.